Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Hey, Big Sean, today we got a guest, don't we?
We do, bro. She's, you know, she's somebody that I've known for a little bit of a while, but a very smart, intelligent young woman. I like to call an old millennial now because they're getting old, these millennials. So they're like 30-somethings now.
Yes, millennials are aging. That's what happens. And we have a very special millennial. She is very funny, very talented. She wears many hats. And she also has her own podcast, which we also were guests on recently called Race Wars, correct?
Yes, it was. And it was very racy wars we were having on that show. Let me tell you, we had a Jewish, a couple blacks in there, a Southern white. And
anything goes on Race Wars.
Anything goes on Race
Wars. You need
to
tune in, by the way, folks, if you want a good time. She's the co-host of Race Wars, and now she's on Two Black Guys with Good Credit. Everyone, welcome Karen Margolis.
Hey, guys. Oh, what a welcome.
Did you ever think you'd be on a show called Two Black Guys with Good Credit?
A girl can dream.
Hilarious. So, Karen, tell us a little bit about yourself. We've announced that you're a millennial. Give us a little bit of background.
You did do that. I am a comedian and a writer. Background about me. I've lived in New York for like 10 plus years. A regular person with regular credit.
How did the Race Wars podcast come about? Tell us about that, and how did you put that together? What's the premise for people who haven't heard it?
Okay.
Give us a little breakdown.
Yeah, so Race Wars was started by Sherrod Small and Kurt Metzger, who are like longtime veteran comedians, comedy specials, like, you know, 20-plus year comics. And then I joined them after a while. Years ago, it's like not exactly a co-host, but just like a regular. And right. Then,
what was it like meeting them? How did that connection kind of blossom into this?
You're like the black woman on Howard Stern's show,
right?
Robin Quivers.
I don't know her name, but I just know the black person out there. But you know, you handle yourself very good on that show. Like you're able to maneuver your way through those guys.
Well, I've known them forever. Like you know, I've known Sherrod for over 10 years. So, you know, and then I joined Race Wars later. So
okay. That
it was easy and natural, you know, it wasn't like an audition process or anything like that. Like I knew them, Kurt and I were dating at the time and then we broke up and then I started co-hosting.
Nice.
So how did this millennial comedian come across financially clean and two black guys with good credit?
So my boyfriend, Matthew.
Shout out to Matthew.
Cutie.
Yes. And his former yoga teacher, Ariel, was a guest on your show. And he sent me an episode and I listened to it and I listened to a few more episodes and we kind of got into, it was an episode about essentializing.
Oh yes.
And I like really, really took it to heart and just like got rid of so much stuff and like too much stuff, like ended up buying a lot of stuff.
Back?
Yeah. So we like got into your podcast a little bit. Matt and I had looked you up and Sean, you were offering a class. And I definitely didn't realize that it was like an 11-week course. I thought it was like a class every week for 11 weeks, you know, and that you could just like go to whatever. And so
that was too much commitment.
We didn't know. We didn't know it was like a semester.
And that was the heated class you came to as well.
It was. Somebody freaked out and left. It was like drama. Yeah, she got triggered by something Sean said, which was like very innocuous.
Oh,
yeah. It was like clearly you could tell what her personal deal was, like what her insecurity. But anyway, we decided we were going to go together to like one of the weeks. We just picked a week and then we broke up.
Oh.
And I still wanted to go. So I went, I think I went to the week before we had decided we were going to go together. So like I went, a different week. And yeah, that's it. I think then, I guess he went the week of.
Yeah, he went the following week.
Yeah, he went the following week. So we both went, but we didn't go at the same time. And then we reconnected and yeah, that's it. Still love you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And I think love was back in the air too for the two of you, no?
Yep.
Let's mention that.
Yeah, so, things are good.
So good.
Two black guys made it happen.
That's what we do. It's what we do.
I mean, the credit is all yours.
With good credit.
No pun intended.
Oh my God. Witty comedy. Yeah, that's quick.
So what were some of the things that are... in terms of your own credit or your own financial journey, things uh-huh. that maybe you were interested in, or in when you took the courses or things you were trying to accomplish, or what was on your mind as in the state of your financial life when you came?
Yeah, I guess I'd never really thought about finance in a serious way. And I had a really sort of like millennial attitude towards it, which is that it doesn't apply to me. And, you know, it just never really occurred to me to take it seriously. And I guess I hadn't really had a lot of reason to, but at that point in my life, I was starting to like transition to big girl thoughts, you know, like what are we doing? Like as I was kind of getting older and like in my mid to late 20s, it becomes real, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's not like the future becomes an entity. And I was like, well, what are we doing? So thinking about finance was like really new to me. And it is like really interesting to me. Like we were talking before the show about how like everything's interesting. There's so many areas of interest, but it was such an abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have concrete ideas of what I should be doing, or I knew I should be A, making money and B, saving it. But apart from that, like I really didn't know.
Just to give a little more background on Karen, as I'm sure everybody knows now, you know, she's a comedian, but you know, she's very, very bright, graduated from NYU.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you know, a typical kind of millennial that we wanted to bring on the show to kind of talk about like, yeah, I'm educated, I have all the skill sets, and what do you think, how are you thinking about finance? So this is kind of why we decided to bring her on the show, because I think she's a real reflection of a millennial and what their thought process is.
Well, I also graduated in the middle of a recession, so finance didn't feel applicable for a long time. You know what
and
I mean?
And you went to NYU, so it's not like you went to like... You went to a good school.
But there was an unstable job market, right. Like the whole...
It was wild.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what they were doing. Like nobody my age knew what they were doing at all. And unless you'd been sort of like grandfathered into something or had a family business you were going to go into or a very concrete like grad school direction... it was a very confusing time for us young people.
I mean, it's really the beginnings of the whole gig economy was that era where people were finding, you know, different hustles and different jobs and you know, it wasn't the traditional path.
It wasn't the traditional path. So then the question is like, okay, if the traditional path is sort of off the table, then I might as well pick something that I like. And so I owe it to myself to figure out what I like. And money wasn't such a big factor in that, to be honest with you. It didn't seem accessible.
What was your rationale
behind what?
Like deciding what to do, what you like. What were you contemplating, like, as far as like,
because what were you?
Weighing?
I remember you were saying earlier on, what you were actually destined, or kind of what your parents, I guess, were kind of guiding you to what they wanted you to do versus what you decided to do.
Yeah. So, well, the plan had been for me to go to law school at some point, but which I still to this day think is really interesting, but I stopped thinking that being a lawyer was interesting. Was at that point when it occurred to me that what you choose to do with your life, at least for the near to medium term future, it is not really contingent on what interests you. Because everything, for me personally, like everything interests me, you know, like science interests me, finance interests me, language and philosophy and whatever. Like that's not a good starting point. So then you have to ask yourself what you want to do. Like, what do I actually want to wake up and do? You know, so after I brush my teeth and have coffee, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do law. I didn't want to do law. I wanted to, I still would have studied it if I hadn't, wouldn't have gotten me like hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt for a job I didn't want.
Smart woman.
But I just didn't want to do it. And when I talked to lawyers to figure out what law actually entailed, they were not about it. Like, lawyers don't like being lawyers. And they all cautioned me strongly. They were like, be very sure that this is what you want. It's a lot of money up front. It's not, the jobs aren't secure how you think they are. They're not plentiful the way that you've been told that they are. And the work is boring. One of the people I talked to was like, I'll be honest with you. I'm doing this. And she was at NYU Law. She was like, I'm doing this because I have a kid. Mm. And I need to support this kid. And I was like, well, that's the end of that.
Wow.
There goes all the listeners that wanted to be lawyers.
Right.
But I like the financially clean perspective of what you did as well. Like, you did your research before you dove into a very large investment.
Yeah.
Before you actually really understood what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
A lot of people find out when it's too late, like you said.
Mm-hmm. I think I low-key kind of knew I didn't want to do it. And I was almost backwards rationalizing it, you know?
So you switched to becoming, you went right from lawyer to comedian, or were there things in between that you were kind of figuring out before you decided to become a comic?
There was a minute, you know, like a comedian's not an obvious choice, I think, for anyone. Like, artist is not an obvious choice for someone who had planned to go to law school. It's like very different. And I was around a lot of comedy and around a lot of comedians, and I sort of like transitioned into it that way. But yeah, there were just interim jobs, like random jobs that you would get when you're figuring it out.
So when did you think I have to monetize this? Like, this is what I always say.
Pretty recently. Well, because monetizing is not, look, some people, like we were talking about Kevin Hart before, like some people monetize it right away. And I wasn't one of those savvy people. I just wasn't. I was someone who had to build up skills and, you know, make connections and stuff. And that was my priority. And so honestly, it didn't even, monetizing it seemed wild to me, you know?
So when you took a job, it didn't matter what the pay was. You were just looking for the opportunity.
In comedy, you mean?
In general, yeah.
Well, I mean, no, look, I mean, a day job, the pay obviously matters. That's right. All that matters. Right. But in comedy, it's different because the reward of comedy is not all just financial. And I don't mean like, oh, it's for the fulfillment or to make other people laugh. I mean, comedy rewards you as a scene for committing to comedy. So, you know, people respect you, people book you, this and that. So, you know, the money, the cash value or whatever of an opportunity was just a small part of it. And also making money doing art, making any amount of money doing it is actually kind of mind blowing when you start to make money doing it. You know, you're like, I can't believe someone's paying me.
I had that same experience. As a television producer. Like when I first started making money doing it, it was like, you're paying me to do this? Like, this is crazy.
Right.
But I have a question for you. When you were getting your bachelor's.
Yeah.
At that point, when you finished school, were you in heavy debt for school, or were you financially kind of just free? Just let me figure it out. Was there a consciousness of like, oh, I got to pay all this stuff? Or were you just kind of in a, where were you at in that space?
It was like somewhere in the middle. So I wasn't heavily in debt, and I'm still not heavily in debt, but I was in some debt.
Intentionally, or it just happened?
It's just how it happened. My parents had helped me out. And so I wasn't in a massive, I'd had some, you know, scholarships and this and that. So I wasn't in a huge amount of debt,
but
it was a few tens of thousands of dollars worth of debt. It's not nothing.
Right.
And it was a lot of debt. It is a lot of debt, but not for us as college-going Americans. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like anywhere else, yeah, it'd be a little nuts, but relatively, it wasn't that much. However, it was a recession. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And you have a pretty short grace period before you have to start paying that back.
Right.
And my parents were like, we're not really interested in paying this for you.
That on too.
If you could figure this out, that'd be great. So it was, I felt like pressure descending upon me, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, as we're all listening, we have Karen Margolis, a 30-something. We're discussing her financial journey.
Nice.
We're going to take a quick break. So stay tuned. And when we come back, we're going to discuss how she dealt with that that imminent pressure to pay these bills and get her financial life on track. So stay tuned for more Two Black Guys with Good Credit. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Today, we are joined by our guest, Karen Margolis, who is a 30-something and a comedian.
Well
and
said.
Wears lots of hats, and she's we're discussing her financial journey.
Uh-huh.
Sean?
It's the 30-something time. Yeah, all you millennials that think you know but you don't know, this is a show to listen to because we have the great Karen on our show today. And now, Karen, I know we spoke a number of times, and when we were speaking, you know, what is your, like, number one type of financial worry or curiosity, would you say?
Well.
Or goal.
Or goal.
Or goal. I think that at this point, so we talked a little bit about student loan debt, stuff like that. And I think at this point, it's pretty well controlled. Everything's being paid off on a schedule, whatever. Like, it's less scary than it's ever been. And now at this point in my life, it's like I feel paying off debt is looking towards the past. And at this point, I'm really looking towards the future.
Nice.
In a more concrete way than I ever have. And, you know, I always read these memes and all these. There's a lot of like Instagram things that are always popping up. Like
have
little.
The
little
you read of now as a child, now turn to your Instagram readings. Is that where we're at right now?
Honestly, yeah. This, where do you think people are getting financial advice?
Exactly.
Yeah. Little, but it's not the worst. Like there is basically bite-sized information, right? Is what a meme is. And so they're always emphasizing like, you know, hustle and developing streams of income and passive income and this and that. And so that's where my intention is right now.
Money while you sleep.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, what choice do you have? Like life is, I want to have a nice life and go cool places and buy nice things and have some stability. And like when I eventually have kids, not be broke.
Right.
So, like I tell everybody, we're going to like use comedy as an example since that's what you do. Like I look when I'm thinking about you and I'm thinking about like what you do,
uh-huh.
I'm thinking as comedy as a business. Like, do you see it that way? And are you applying
I do
it
now.
That way?
I
so
do
how
now.
Do you, so how do you see it? Like how are you leveraging your comedic skills or your network of comics to kind of make it into that business mindset?
Yeah. So I guess the way that I'm thinking about it now is about monetizing skills that I've been developing for like a decade, you know, and it's not, comedy's not just stand-up. Comedy is broadcasting and podcasting and producing shows and hosting things and whatever you want it to be honest with you.
Blogging, I mean, writing, it could be.
Writing, yeah. Right. It's, I know that sounds very like loosey-goosey, but skills are really transferable. And if you decide that you want to do something tangentially related to comedy, you can use your comedy connections and skills for that thing, right? Any public-facing thing.
I'm not in the business, but I honestly think if I'm a guy, an agent, you just, to me, have the whole package. Like, you're intelligent, you're smart, you know.
Go on.
People don't know. When they look up your name, when they look you up, you're going to be like, whoa, she's gorgeous.
Stop
she's pretty.
It right now. So I'm listening.
Like, so how do you, like, you know, how are you, like, what are the concrete things you're doing in the comedy business now to, like create multiple streams of income and revenue, kind of monetize your skill set? Because this goes in hand with what we try to teach everybody. Like we had a ex-football player on the show, and he was just like, what we learned at the end was like, the skills that he's learning is his training skills. So now he's training and he's buying real estate from football. So kind of, what are you doing within kind of in that context?
Yeah, so I guess my mind has expanded. And honestly, part of that has been dating a non-comic. Yes. And yeah, he's the best. And also it's just, it's been, and I think we've like balanced each other in a way because it broke me out of the comedy programming, which is that if what you're doing is not exactly comedy, then it's not worth it.
Really?
And that's actually a really toxic mindset, and it damages people, I think. And, you know, there's only one Amy Schumer. There's not a lot of that to go around. There just isn't, and we have to be real. Comedy is amazing, and I love doing it, and I've built up these skills, and I've developed a level of competence at it, which I put in some dues. Like, that wasn't, it wasn't like nothing.
But there's more to you than just that.
But so I'm not just that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not
what's
just
niche,
that.
Philly girl? What's your niche?
So, well, that's a really good question. I mean, so now my focus is taking my diverse interests and my comedy skills and combining them in an entrepreneurial way. And I know that sounds really vague, but like in a concrete sense, that means instead of just you know, participating on podcasts and radio shows to host my own. Not just Race Wars, which is, you know, Race Wars is, I'm sort of the young comic on Race Wars. It's not mine. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes. You don't own it, yeah.
I don't own it, and it's and I give full props to Sherrod. And if you don't know Sherrod Small, he's an amazing, one of the most talented people I know, and has been like a mentor figure to me for a long time. But that's his show, and so it's time for me to have
but
a show.
But that's the right mindset. Like that's like people that want to leave their job. Like you don't own it. Like you're trying it out. That's the business mindset.
And yeah, I'll need to own. I'll do it. Yeah, I absolutely love doing Race Wars. I love it. If you haven't listened to the show, it's such a funny, dope show, and I don't think there's anything like it, honestly. However, it's not mine, and it's time for me to have things that are mine in addition to like continue to do these projects that I love.
So what is it?
Absolutely.
So I want to so I'm working on a pitch for a network that I'm on all the time for my own show, almost like Joe Rogan Experience type talk show, but like for an hour and hosted by me. And like I want it to be I'm like, what am I just giving everything away? But it's like I'm scared to give away this pitch.
You want to have your own show. You can
I want to have my own show. I know I like the talker in me just like can't shut up. But yes, I want to have my own show.
Shut the front door.
I know. I'm such a, I will just give away every detail. But anyway, want to host my own show. And I also.
And why is that? From a business perspective.
Why is that?
Yeah. What is that going to do for you? What doors are going to open up because of doing that?
Well, first of all, you can leverage hosting a show in a professional capacity. First of all, it'd be on a network, so it wouldn't be.
When you say network, TV, radio?
A podcast network, but sort of a, yeah, subscription-based podcast network. So I'm not interested. I've done this before, and I'm not interested in repeating the experience of basically buying a bunch of podcast equipment and just doing it on my own.
I agree.
Do not want to do that. That is a huge pain in the ass. And, you know, to build up a listenership and this and that, I want to just skip over all that.
Been there, done that.
Let's talk
about
the business.
What
you want to do, you want to leverage. That's why you want to partner so you can leverage their resources to grow your base much faster, which is what I agree.
And not just that, but, you know, host a stand-up show of my own. These things are all, like, cross-promotable. You know what I mean? It's really the same thing. It's just different iterations of the same thing. If you like my stand-up and then you like listening to me talk on the radio, you've got multiple options for that. And
so we're telling everybody, we tell everybody on the show, you're creating a brand.
Yeah,
and that brand
that's
is
exactly
going to have
it.
Value. And that brand is going to have multiple streams as to what you do.
Right.
You are going to be your own brand and nobody can take that from you.
That's right.
And when you do, I'm just going to give you a few of the highest paid comedians of 2019.
Oh, this is going to be so triggering.
Hey, no, this is something to aspire to. It's all how you look at
that's
it.
That's
right.
Let's reframe it.
That's it. That's the life coach coming out of me. Trevor Noah, he's doing $28 million. You've got, looks like Gabriel Iglesias, $22
million. Good for him.
Amy Schumer's doing $21 million.
For her.
Yeah. So there's definitely business to be had.
There is. The thing about comedy, though, is like, and I think about a lot of things, is that a few people have almost the entire market share.
Really?
And yeah, I find that to be true
it's
for
like
a lot of
stuff.
Like wealth
in the world, the 1% with all the wealth, and
it's
then,
true.
You know, the rest of the...
Well, so most comics, you know, are just getting by, you think?
I know.
Really?
Yeah. Well, look, here, it's comedy's really interesting. So there's a lot of people who are getting by. There's people that comedians all really respect, but you guys don't know who they are, and they're making an okay living. There's comedians that all comics love and that also aren't super well known, but are on tour all the time and actually making a pretty substantial amount of money, but people still don't really, they're not a household name, but they're making like, you know, a quarter or half $1 million a year just touring, and the public doesn't really know them. So it's weird. It's an interesting thing. There's people who seem weirdly prominent but are making very little money, are supported in other ways.
Well, that's when it comes back to finance. And I always tell people, like, you know, even when I mentor young kids that are like professional athletes, basketball players, I said, there's many other alternatives you can do in that same field to make money and to leverage yourself and to create an income. Just because the most popular person, just because you're not popular doesn't mean you can't produce an income and you can't find a niche. So you can just stay under the radar and like carry and make good money along the way and build a career out of it.
Yeah, right.
Because most people are going to work every day back and forth and making $80,000 a year and calling that a career. But if someone says, oh, I'm at $80,000, but I'm a football player or a comic, people are looking at you like you failed. I'm like, what? This is like $80,000 doing something I love. So I think it's like how you kind of leverage it and look at it as a business, you know.
Now I think about Steve Harvey, for example. So I don't know if you heard a story where his teachers told him he'd never be on television.
Who are these teachers that keep telling kids that they can't do stuff?
I know. Fire them.
He was in elementary school, maybe 6 years old.
Uh-huh.
And that was the day they were asked, okay, everybody's going to write down what they want to be when they grow up. And basically, he wrote down his little his little essay, and then his teacher called him to the front, and he walked up all proud, and then she's asked him, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he says, I want to be on television. And she said, I'm calling your parents. Who do you know that's ever been on television? Luckily, he had a father who said, look, son, you keep this piece of paper, keep it in your drawer, fold it up, and look at it every day. So this is where the visualization comes in, but I'm sure it was before his time. But he wrote down his goal, and he looked at it every day. Steve Harvey's on television every day of the week, almost 24/7, right? And now he's worth about $160 million, and talk about a brand.
Good for him.
And branching out, right? So there's, as you were saying, there's no one way to do comedy anymore. So he took his comedy, now he brought it to game shows and pageants and whatever else. So, you know, sky's the limit. Basically, it's what you want to do.
So, Karen, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the similarities to what, you know, I'm a television producer. I've been doing it for a long time. And with that, there's a lot of instability. And, you know, it's not your traditional doctor, lawyer, weekly check. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely gratifying. But budgeting, when you're working in an unstable or a kind of erratic artistic environment, how hard or how much does budgeting come into play for your existence?
I would say that it either comes into play a lot or like it doesn't, depending on, you know, like in the past, I didn't sweat it because it was triggering, to use a millennial word, it was triggering to think about it. And so I was just like, you know, my payday hasn't come and you got to spend money to make money, like all that kind of stuff. And I just like didn't worry about that. I just didn't want to think about it. I needed certain things and I it felt punishing to...
In retrospect, was that a good thing to do? Some people that are listening now?
Well, probably not, but it's what I did.
But it made you aggressive to go get your career gig done. It made you like, there's always, I mean, I'm the finance guy and there's always two ways to look at it. Because if you were too conservative and overthinking it, you may not have been able to do that leap of faith.
Yeah, and spending money on yourself is a vote of confidence in yourself.
Investing,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Not everybody has the courage to do it.
Yeah.
People talk about it, want to be about it, but investing in yourself for some people... It's very difficult.
Well, it's scary because then you have to go do it.
In this time span that you've been doing this, I would imagine from your start to now, there's things you've learned into how to navigate your year or your finances.
I make more money than I used to, so that helps. And I also, I guess, have prioritized. I'm not the best budgeter, but certain things are sort of a non-negotiable priority. I need to pay rent. I need to pay off my student loans. I need to pay down credit cards, which are not that crazy, but a little bit stressful. And I need to eat food and take the subway. And those things take priority. And then with my other money, no, I'm not the best at budgeting that. But what I don't spend, I put away.
Nice.
And it's not really that intentional. It really is whatever I haven't spent is saved. And that varies all the time, depending on what my expenses are and what I'm doing and if I'm going places and buying things and whatever. And that's kind of that's the budget.
Well, I want to say two things. One thing I want to talk about, investing in yourself. I know we kind of went away. And, you know, I say it's so important because you don't see a return on your investment right away. It takes a while for it to kick in. Like, I'm in my 40s, and I'm just seeing my return on my investment. Yes, I bought real estate and other things, but when I started to invest really in Sean Linda, where I started doing the finance stuff, financially clean, like, I see how I become a brand because, like, you're at an event, you know, the borough president, my name gets dropped now. People call me for Sean not to look at a property. And I see even with Dion, like, where she decided to become a brand and invest and believe in herself. You see the transitioning happen where people are coming to you, and I see it with Matt as well. And then the second thing I wanted to say with regards to, like, you know, budgeting and so forth, like, we did a show on budgeting the budgeting. And, you know, one thing I say, you're kind of not in this alone. And I think probably not intentionally, but you kind of found that partner. Because when I spoke to Matt, he's your boyfriend. He's all about numbers.
You know what I'm saying?
But he needs that balance. He needs that beautiful comic to kind of bring relief to his, like, binary numbers, X's and O's and ones and zeros all day long.
I needed his financial sense to knock some sense into me, honestly. It is not sustainable to float around as an artist without thinking about financial security. It's just not right. But also, I think when you're in such a non-traditional field, doing non-traditional things and making non-traditional money, somebody's got to knock a little sense into you and be like, look, it's really important to think about these things. And that's the balance he brought to me too.
Yeah. And so it starts with, you know, having, like I always saying, having that right person to kind of balance things on and buzz things off and kind of working with them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as far as even budgeting tips, it's really staying strict and true to what your needs and wants are.
Yeah.
And then managing that. And I think you, from what I'm hearing, like you're doing that, or you started doing that.
Yeah.
But I also believe, like, and still enjoy yourself along the way. Because life
I am,
is a journey.
But that is actually the most important part. And I'm not saying that in like a woo-woo way. I'm saying that as soon as you lose sight of that, you stop building your brand and making money. Whenever I get stressed out and I feel the joy starting to slip out of what I'm doing, and it starts becoming work, like everything's screwed up. You know what I mean? My all of a sudden my money's not right, and I'm not happy, and I'm not productive. And the having fun with it, especially if you've chosen something like I have, which is the path that I'm on. If you're not having fun, then what is the point? Then why didn't I become a lawyer?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Balance.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, and we can take it a step further, because on our 2020 vision show, we were kind of giving tips for, you know, the coming year for financial, you know, people who want to get their financial goals, you know, jump started. Mm-hmm. You can even make your budgeting fun. So even that doesn't have to be a dread.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And you can be excited.
Well, actually, I know, but I don't know. I don't even know what that means. Yeah. Go on.
It's like vegetables can be tasty.
Yeah.
Vegetables are the best.
But you can make it a game. You can make it fun, you know, and actually it's exciting when, because especially, so the idea is, and this is for everyone, 30 something, you're not alone, about 2/3 of your generation, they're not budgeting. So just know that you're not alone.
I believe it 100%. It's so scary. It's so scary to start to think about it, because you have to accept the good with the bad, right?
You do. And budgeting doesn't have to be bad. So we'll already take that away.
Because
budgeting is not bad,
thanks,
right?
Tian,
that's already a lens right there, right? And it's amazing, because I heard you at one point say the head in the sand when, you know, it maybe becomes overwhelming, right?
Yeah, right.
But that's what finance is. If you don't stay with it,
it
starts to control you rather than you being in control.
Yeah. And I hate that. Yeah. I hate that. And I hate feeling it, like feeling that pressure on me. And, you know, what honestly helps a lot too is, like, and budgeting is part of that, is is being really active and proactive. Like,
that's
if
it.
I'm not, and not just with money, but like in my life, my career, you know, if I slack, I start to get depressed. I'm freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm sort of loosey goosey with my money, I'm upset and stressed and not. I'd rather spend less money and actually have more enjoyment out of my life, because I'm not as scared about money. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'd rather curtail that and feel better about what I'm doing.
It carries over in the other areas of your life.
Totally.
Right?
And the stress is, right? Yeah. Everything's one thing. You can't compartmentalize stress, right? Or I can't.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
if one thing's out of whack, the whole ship is not right. Yeah.
Right. Right. So clarity is important. And we'll just give a few tips on just the budgeting process for everybody out there. You really want to have realistic goals, because when you know what's coming in and what's going out,
uh-huh.
when you get really clear,
yeah.
right? Look at, she's holding her stomach.
I know. It's like,
wow. You want to hold my hand?
Yeah, I do.
Right. That's what's going to take the fear away. When you,
okay.
you actually know what's going on.
I know.
And you and Matt can do this together.
I think he would probably love that.
No, it's true.
Okay.
And that was actually one of the tips we gave in our last show as well.
Okay.
So if you guys think you're there, you know, you can actually, that transparency actually can bring you even closer together. And you know where your money's going, right?
Yeah, right.
So setting realistic goals, identify your income and expenses. Again, what's coming in, going out,
oh God,
right?
Oh God. Uh-huh.
Okay. Then you're already doing most
you're
of the
such
stuff,
a life
right?
coach, Dion. You're such a life coach.
And then, you know, like Sean said, and you're already doing this, separate your wants from your needs, right?
Right.
Luckily, you already have your priorities pretty much set, and then you have your fun money, which is great.
Right.
And then you're going to design that budget.
Yeah.
Actually create the spreadsheet, however it works for you. Maybe it's an app.
It's time, yeah.
You know,
it is
30-something.
True.
Love a good app. Then he's put into action.
Okay.
Right? Which I know you're not afraid of that.
I you know what? I am. However, I'm at the point in my life when things that are scary have a certain appeal, yeah. And it's time to run towards them.
Exactly.
Face your fears.
Everything that you want is on the other side of fear.
Right.
And that's
so
where I'm gonna leave it.
How does credit
does
credit come into the game with you as far as like,
but yeah, credit's a funny thing, right? So I remember a couple years ago when I remember like dipping my toe in. I hadn't had a credit card, like I was just really good about not having a credit card. And then I was like,
why is
that
really good?
Because I knew I could not be trusted. I knew I couldn't be trusted. I knew, because credit to me is very abstract. It just feels like not real money. You spend money that seems unreal. Cash is not exchanging hands. Money's exchanging hands, but cash is not. And then you have things.
Can I ask,
then,
what do your parents do? Did they kind of, were they that way with credit? Or
no, they are so, so, so responsible. My parents, my dad's from here, but my mom's an immigrant. And they together had this, you know, the immigrant mentality of being really, really smart with their money. They're doing great now, but in my like earlier childhood, they really had to hustle, and like they're both professors. So, you know, they are just have been always super smart with their money, ended up buying property, you know, like a house for us at a certain point, and have just been really smart with it. Like,
so you grew up in a responsible household when it comes to credit.
Extreme. So responsible that it was irritating. Like, you know what I mean? They were so responsible. I remember we had a change.
Like, let your hair down.
Guys, it was like, it's not like we don't have anything. It would get to the point of, like, I didn't understand it really as a kid. And as like a young adult, which is when you can get yourself in trouble because now you're old enough to make poor decisions that legally stick to you. And so it was like extreme. What I felt was extreme, you know, like they had this little change purse, and I remember we would like save up these coins, and then we could go to a Starbucks and like get a thing, and that was an event, and that's really cute. Looking back on it, I'm like, yeah, why shouldn't they have done that? What else were we going to do with coins? You know, and Starbucks is not good for you. So if you're going to have a disgusting treat. Coins. Yeah, right. And
that's overpriced.
It was a whole thing. Right. So they were like, if there's the coins and if we have the coinage, then by all means, get yourself a Frappuccino or whatever. And it was like very exciting and meant something.
Two Black Guys Good Credit brought to you by Starbucks. Keep killing it, right? Ruin that.
Oh my God. You guys, let's talk equity in the show.
What caused a shift in when you were growing? Like, what caused you to shift as far as credit is concerned and your outlook on credit?
Well, I because I have to learn everything the freaking hard way, and I know things intellectually that I don't know emotionally until I'm there. So, you know, I dipped my toe in. I was like, well, I wonder if it would be easier for me if I could buy things on credit and then pay it off later. And so, lo and behold, it's really, really easy to get a credit card. It takes nothing,
right?
And then you have this little card, and I was like, okay, word. And then I...
Say that again. You
word
said that again.
Up.
Okay, word.
So like, here I am. I felt like a real grown-up, you know. Now I have this card. And at first, it wasn't even a physical card. Like, PayPal can extend you a line of credit. And so I thought it was real slick because I didn't have a card that I could swipe. So I thought that would be sort of insurance against running up debt, right? Like, I can only do this online. So, of course, you can do everything online. That is not helpful. And then there was one more... So I have two of them, and neither of them, I do deal with them on a monthly basis, but I don't want to, and they stress me out.
So how do you feel about credit right now?
I feel as though
you're getting like
my
hot,
friend has
sweaty.
Turned against me. Yeah, I feel as though...
See little beads of sweat.
You guys, I'm ruining my blowout. I can't be sweating like this. Yeah, I feel as though what was once to me very innocuous, now I sort of snapped to it and was like, okay, let's... let's treat this like the utility that it is. It's not free money.
Absolutely.
It's the exact opposite of free money. It's very expensive money.
Well, it depends. I love credit. I think credit, if you use it right, like for even...
But I haven't used it right.
In its simple terms, it's a free 30-day loan, right?
I know. That's what Matt said. That is what he said. He was like, just pay off the whole balance and, you know, I will get there.
Exactly. And then, you know, it allows you to like... use a dollar can work in three different ways. Like, you can collect points, rewards, those type of things, and getting back to budgeting,
yeah,
you know, it's easier to budget with credit cards and so forth,
right?
And it kind of, like you said, you want to get into real estate, acquiring property. This is kind of building up your resume.
Yeah.
Wait, Sean, can I ask you a question? We've heard you tell the we can use a dollar in three separate ways. Can you tell me those three ways? I want to know the three ways.
One thing is to purchase the item, so the A and B transaction.
Uh-huh.
Another thing is for to get rewards, points, and those discounts. And the third thing is to build up your credit score.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that, to me, now that you're kind of warming up to it, and when I teach at high school level, I encourage kids to establish credit as early as possible,
mm-hmm,
because it's that secret partner. Like, for example, if you wanted to start your own network, for example, I'd rather be able to borrow the money than kind of get an investor if I could, because all you have to do with credit is just meet the monthly terms of your negotiation.
Well, so let me ask you this then. If you have a balance on your credit card, and it's not astronomical or anything like that, it's manageable, but it's more than you can pay off in a single month because you've allowed that to slip, What's the best way? You know, I guess you don't want to be paying a minimum every month, right? You want to pay it off as quickly as possible. But like, what is the best strategy to attack that?
There's a couple of ways. So there's one, it's called the avalanche method. I'm not sure if you've heard of this before.
Never.
But basically, if you have multiple credit cards, right, you're actually going to pay the balances on all of them, mm-hmm. but you're going to pay as much as you can on the one with the highest balance.
Okay.
So you don't necessarily see the avalanche, you know how the avalanche takes time to kind of build up?
Yeah.
So you don't really see the results as quickly, mm-hmm. but eventually, once you get that first one paid off, then you can see you can put so much more on the next one, and you're saving a lot more money because you're paying the highest interest rate card first. So that's the idea. So, and it takes longer. That's probably one of the cons to it.
Yeah, right.
But
it's
it does
so satisfying
work.
To see that balance just disappear.
Right, yeah. Right. But that's one way to do it. Or you could also just, you have multiple credit cards, pay off the one with the biggest balance. The smallest balance. Mm-hmm. So you get the small wins.
Yeah,
especially
right.
If you have five cards, for example. Imagine if you pay off all those, the smaller ones first. You see, though, you get encouraged by at least getting some cards paid off.
Yeah, right.
And then you might see it just move a little faster maybe than the avalanche. But the other one's called the snowball method.
I'll tell you my hustle 101. You know, okay. I'm always an outside-the-box type of guy. Mm-hmm. And I kind of use what's presented to me. And one of the things that I love in America is that we have what we call zero-interest credit cards, which you've heard of them. They're called teaser rates. And depending on how good your score is, you can apply for one. And it'll be like a zero-interest card. Because the theory behind it is that they want to move you from they want to acquire you. It's an acquisition cost.
Okay.
So they want to, you know, if it means giving you a zero interest for X amount of months to bring you over into their books, credit card companies are willing to do that.
Okay.
So they can extend them. I've seen them go, the minimum there are is 12 months, but I've seen them go as long as 24 months. So I always tell people, like I just had a student come to my store on Sunday and she was like, she had $3,000 in debt and she was like paying this high interest rate and she wanted to meet with me to talk about how she can reduce that. And I'm like, before we meet, try to apply for zero interest credit cards online. And she had like a 600 credit score, so she wasn't getting any, but she just got this new Capital One card for her business. And we're sitting there and on Sunday and I'm like, let me call Capital One, see what terms you got on this, because you just got the new card. And long and behold, it was a zero interest for 18 months. I'm like, why are you here? Like, you have a zero interest card. You just got to divide it by 18 and just make your monthly payments and you're good. So I think, and that's how you play the game. I've seen guys use zero interest credit cards to invest on renovating property, do all kinds of stuff. So I would advise you, go home, mm-hmm. apply to see what zero interest credit cards offers are out there for you. Apply. People are like, oh, if I apply for too many, is it going to ruin my credit score? It's minimal. It's mm-hmm. not, the reward is more than the couple of points that your credit score may drop.
And right? and do what? Transfer balances?
Transfer balance it, yeah. And then amortize it amongst it. If you get a 24-month zero interest, amortize the balance over that 24 months. But here's the key. This is the discipline, which I think you have now.
Okay.
Is that when you transfer the balance over to a new card, you don't acquire new debt.
I have no intention of buying anything on credit until these cards are paid off. Honest to God, unless it's an emergency or I have no other choice or whatever, like something small, you know, once in a while you have to. But it's funny because my little debt is small potatoes. It's not a lot. And I really feel for people who have like a lot of credit cards and are tens of thousands of dollars in debt. Like, oh my God, that must be crushing stress.
But you still have to. Funny thing is, I tell people all the time as well. It's like, yes, you're working on paying off, but you still have to grow your brand. It still comes back to what we talked about early in the show. Like, you are a brand. You have to continue to grow. Like, I don't believe in this. I'm going to stop everything and just do this mm-hmm. and then put everything else
to
the
side. Yeah, you still have to make investments.
Smart investments.
But I have a question about how do you feel? Is your credit score something that's a stress or an issue for you? Are you happy with it? Is that something you're trying to? Obviously, most people are trying to.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay.
I do not know what it is.
And the avoidance kind of the head in the sand. Yeah.
And 2020, this is the year to, you know, put on my big girl pants. And all us millennials have to be adults. It's like, that is honestly where, I'll speak for all millennials. Like, I'll just do it. That's, I feel where we are. Like, the people who have been the late bloomers, I'll speak for that subsection. Like, 2020 is the year to know your credit score. So I don't know it.
You're going to start the movement today.
Yeah. Today? That's so soon.
Why tomorrow?
Okay.
Log on.
I'm all about to do it now. But just to give like a kind of an overview of our millennials right now and where they are in debt or young people. So there was a study done by FICO and they said basically young adults between 18 and 24 they held around $2,000 in credit card debt. And by the time they got to the late 20s, it would nearly double. So it sounds about right. So again, you know, you're right kind of in the realm of things.
And there's things like Credit Karma where you can easily like log on, get your credit score, creditkarma.com, and they will tell you, like when you really like, it's like getting the gym membership for the person who's like, I'm focused, I'm going to go and lose weight or whatever. Credit Karma will track what you're doing, and like as your credit card is credit score is fluctuating, they send you monthly updates, and they'll tell you like if you're doing good, oh, your score just jumped 30
really?
Points.
It's very reward based.
It is.
Yeah, you get that little dopamine hit when you're doing a good job.
True.
Right.
Yeah, I love that. Love that for me.
But in addition to Credit Karma, you could just reach out to the actual
free credit.
Yes.
The government allows you to get your credit score every year, but it's required by law now. So you can go like freecreditscore.com. Like, there's no reason why to like to not do it. Karen.
True.
Other than
and you know there's three of them.
I do theoretically. Okay. I don't know what they are, but I do know there's three. Yeah.
Okay, so that's important.
Okay.
There's Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. They all give three separate scores.
Are those scores pretty consistent across the board?
Well, that depends. That's why you should check.
They're independent companies, organizations. So if two are right and one is wrong, guess what that story tells, Karen?
Okay. What?
That. You may, one of them may be getting wrong information.
Gotcha.
So you need to contact that person direct, that credit card.
So that's on you. Got to reach out to them and be like, what's happening?
Their role is just to really collect data.
Okay.
Not to kind of figure if everything is correct.
So they're not like cross-referencing this data. They're just
independent. Aggregating McDonald's, it. Wendy's, and Burger King. They don't speak to one another, right?
We don't know that. I don't. Do you know the ins and outs of the burger business? I don't.
but I was going to say to you, yeah, someone could have your same name. And could have purchased something, and they literally make a mistake like that. And then you, guess what? I'm not sure if you've heard of this. It's called snail mail.
Yeah. That's just mail, right?
Just mail.
Okay.
Not sure if the 30-somethings still do that, but you might actually have to write a letter to them.
No.
Or make a phone call, but yeah, and get it rectified. You might have to write a few, just so you know. But we're going to just believe that everything's good with yours.
Okay.
But that would be the
Credit
next step.
Credit Karma. I'm writing this down right now. Mm-hmm. It's an app, you say.
And there's another one called Mint, where you can combine credit and budgeting.
Writing it down.
Again, keeping it light and tight, you know?
.com.
A little less scary.
And Mint. No, you know what? And you're right. I love an app. I do love an app.
Mm-hmm.
Streamlines things, simplifies things.
Yeah.
Honestly, the thought of taking that much letter writing initiative to deal with credit stuff is absolute wildness to me. And I already don't want to do it, but I can download an app. That's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Baby steps.
Right.
Well, actually, one other thought or question that I had with just listening to your story, and like I said earlier, with it working in the arts, I feel a kinship to that part of the grind. But when you're looking for the other streams of income and revenue, is it all centered on the comedy and your brand, or are you also looking at stuff completely out of that realm, like in terms of real estate or doing other things or stock market or investing, or is it all comedy, or do you have other thoughts of jumping into other?
Yeah, so that's a really, really interesting question. And I want to kind of do everything. I don't see any reason. I think comedy skills
spoken
are actually
like
really, really transferable. Well, yeah, but I know what you mean. You know, millennials kind of want to do everything and nothing, but I feel that comedy is a kind of specialty, and those kinds of performance hosting skills are really applicable to a lot of other stuff. So yes, eventually, down the line, this was a question I had for you guys. If real estate is a good investment, or if I've heard both things that people say, well, real estate, buying a place to live in isn't a good investment, but buying a place to rent out is, like, I don't know what the right thing to do is.
All right,
is.
Hold on. Did she just take over the question asking portion? She's like, she hosts her own podcast. She just grabbed the mic. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to allow Karen to, we're going to flip the script, and
oh,
we're
going
to give her the opportunity to ask us some questions. So it's 30-something day on Two Black Guys with Good Credit. Stay tuned, and we'll have more with Karen Margolis. So keep it locked.
Perfect. Woo.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Today, we are joined by our resident 30-something, Karen Margolis.
Woohoo!
She is a very skilled, multi-hat-wearing person.
Hey.
And you know, she hosts her own podcast, so we're going to allow her to host this section and ask our Two Black Guys team some questions. So take it away, Karen.
Okay, cool. Thanks, guys. Okay, so we spoke a little bit before about kind of what I'm trying to do here, and the goal is to expand a brand, build a business, you know, like kind of branch out,
right.
Use comedy skills for other things. And so the question is, like, what are we doing? What does the future actually look like compared to what it used to look like in the past, right? Like, is my parents' boomer financial wisdom, does that apply still?
Answering your question directly, it's like the advice you might have gotten from some, not forget baby boomers or your parents, someone walking the earth in, you know, 15 years ago, things have shifted. So there's truths and there's good habits and good things that are consistent that, you know, can still be of value. Yeah. But then there's changes to the game. So you kind of, I think, have to have a dual view of like taking solid advice from people, but also always being aware of how the game is shifting from a comedian point of view or just from a person. And when you're looking at credit or real estate or what's going on in the world, like there's so many things like Uber didn't exist, you know, like the world is different.
Yeah.
So the game is different, but there are solid advice.
Yes, I agree.
Points that are consistent. But I just think you need to look at things. You need to look at it with your both sides of your brain.
Right. Yeah. Because if you look at, for example, real estate, I mean, Sean will agree. If your parents, if they said the dream was to buy a home,
yeah.
That's the American dream, and that's the journey, to, you know, on the path to wealth, I would still look at that because the wealthiest people made most of their money in real estate. I think 90%, they said, you know, of successful wealthy people made it in real estate.
Well, I'll say this though, Karen, to compliment you in a short time that I've known you.
Go on, man.
Yeah, I love you. Just like me would. Self-praise is all praise. But I'll say this, you know, I don't know if you realize it, but you are, I mean, you do work on diversifying yourself in
yeah.
a sense that, listen, you do a show, Race Wars, with, to me, most maybe white Jewish chicks may not do, but to grow your brand, you kind of threw yourself in there and you make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do, you know, then you're doing your other events that you're doing. And these are all experiences that you can help to grow and diversify your
yeah.
brand. And to me, when like now I'm sitting here with you, like a lot of comic is their core business. But they do talk shows. They do new stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
like, and I want to say, like, I would love to be your agent because I think there's so many ways in which we can, directions we can put you in. And then, you know, because
let's
you have
not
that,
forget merchandising.
Yeah, because you have that confidence and that look, like, and you're funny. Like, there's ways in which you can be on MSNBC. You can be on CNN. You can be writing scripts. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can be doing ads. It's like all those different things that you can leverage on to keep the diversity going. So, me, the word for you is, you know, diversify.
So in that vein, though, do you got full disclosure, last year I decided to, this was just a little experiment on my part, right? I put $1,000 in Bitcoin, just Bitcoin, not
mm-hmm.
cryptocurrency in general.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to, I don't care.
You got player money, girl.
Hey,
word.
Now we're talking.
It was enough to, a nice round number. It was enough to like make it a little bit interesting, right? Because I do follow it and I like really
mm-hmm.
am so interested
if
in it.
It pops off and you win, cool.
Right.
Cool. And
right.
if not, it's fine. It's
right.
a grand, right? I can afford to lose that if that's what happens. But I know it's not like Bitcoin's not the end all be all. There's a lot of other like interesting projects and opportunities. But the question is, do you think that crypto has any kind of longevity? Do you think it's like kind of here to stay? I feel like it does. I think like there's like so many talented people working on it, and that like blockchain technology is really applicable
but in itself,
in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But do you think that, so the question is twofold, but same topic, is do you think that cryptocurrency has a strong future, and Bitcoin specifically, where do you think that's going?
Well, here's my take on it. The premise, we don't know who quote unquote invented Bitcoin, but what we understand, the premise of the Bitcoin was to be using as as a currency to trade on, to get rid of people using money. It was a backlash to Wall Street, what's happening. And what they didn't realize, it's become a commodity like Wall Street, like anything else. The plan was we would be able to go into stores and just pay on Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But it's becoming, because there's only 21 million Bitcoins out there, that it's kind of been created that demand. Mm-hmm. So the question is, are you asking me, are we going to be using it to buy things, which was its sole purpose? Or are we going to be just using it as a way in which to make money and trade?
Do you think that it might be an effective store of value? Is it a good investment? Not as cash,
because that's the purpose. That was what it was supposed to be.
But it's turned out to not really be.
And is that a good
so
thing?
Useful in that?
So the founders, think they're happy about
it's
that?
It's hard to spend,
right?
No, it was not that it's hard to spend. It's become supply and demand. More people that demand it. If there's only 21 million out there,
sure,
and 200 million people want it, guess what? It drives the price up.
But
of
it's also just hard to transact with Bitcoin. Like transaction times are really slow. Like it's not easy.
And just to give a sense to everybody right now, where Bitcoin is hovering at. So one Bitcoin equals $7,919 right now.
So my answer to you is, I like blockchain. I think blockchain is great because it's open. Everybody sees what's going on, how it's transactional based. I think that will last.
Yeah.
But the Bitcoin itself, I think it'll fluctuate up and down in the market. Everybody will buy it, but I don't know how long it'll be around for. But I do believe in blockchain technology.
So just what's kind of ironic with the whole thing is that successful crypto companies are now trading on the stock market,
mm-hmm.
which is completely opposite of the whole, original concept of this whole thing.
That's what's so exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess they're not going anywhere. So
that's what I'm saying. But Sean rolled his eyes to the back of his head when I mentioned Bitcoin.
Oh, he's a baby boomer. Stuck in his ways.
No, my only suggestion to you, Karen.
It's to diversify a little bit.
Always think diversify because what goes up may
Absolutely.
Come down. And it's always about diversifying. If you love trading on Bitcoin, you should find something to hedge yourself. We did a show on bonds, which is very safe. You can look into bonds.
I'm writing it down now.
To offset your
time to bond.
Your aggressive Bitcoin.
Well, the plan that I had going in was I was going to put some money into just Bitcoin, because Bitcoin, the OG Bitcoin, is interesting to me. And like just following that is sort of like a barometer of what crypto is doing. And then put another chunk of money into, like you said, pick like a few really interesting currencies or tokens and do my little research and see, like sort of a short term, medium term, and then longer term, break it up into that.
Right.
And there's not a lot of money. This is just because it interests me. And then put another little chunk of money into like traditional stocks and bonds.
Well, let me tell you this. And this year I was like really being active with my investments, and I was, working with a broker, and I was being conservative. I got into some stocks, and I got into some bonds and mutual funds and so forth. And, being conservative and not too aggressive, I was very happy. I just found out last week, I had a 14% return on my investments.
That's amazing.
Exactly. And it wasn't really, I could sleep at night.
Yeah.
And I love to sleep.
So, Karen,
Karen,
we have time for one more question.
Okay.
If you have one.
Yeah, I do have one more question. Do you guys think that there's going to be a crash in 2020, like everybody keeps saying?
We're so tweet Trump driven. It's really like, this is what I always said. When I worked on Wall Street, I was like, I graduated in finance. I read all these books, textbooks, and I'm like, and you start to really realize the book of life, like, which is very unpredictable.
That's deep.
It is, right? And so, to answer that question, there's so many things that may happen political-wise. Like, look what just happened in Iran. Like, that is all dependent on the economy. Like, if we went deep into this World War III, could the market crash? Absolutely. But if we don't, if we get a new government, what could happen? So anybody can tell you that they know, those are the ones that you can run hard from, because they really don't know. all I can tell you what you can do is focus on you and your brand. And what's the word?
Diversify.
I love that for me. If you're worried about, listen, one thing I can tell you, world depression, nah, not a reality. If one country is doing poorly, there's another country that's doing great. So it's always looking beyond that. If one city, one investment, like, everybody needs to laugh.
Yeah.
I don't care how the comedy. Maybe it's $20 to get in during a booming time. It may be $5 to get in during a non-booming time.
Oh, there's a million ways to do it. You could have free shows and then you get the bar, whatever.
See, that's what I'm saying.
There's a truth to it.
We get scared of this whole macro thing that we see on TV.
Yeah.
But it's really like if we go in, like you just said it perfectly and you just said it jokingly, but it's so true. You switch your game up. You know, I used to charge $20 to get in, and that's what people don't know when to how to adapt to a new current environment.
Right.
So, yes, we're in a perfect booming economy. You can charge $3 to get in the door. If you see the market changing, then you adjust your game.
Right.
Like you just said, let me have some free shows and negotiate with bar owners and say, you know what? I just want a certain percentage of the bar. And those bartenders will be, comedy clubs will be attracted to you because they're like, yo, they're letting me make more money because the economy is suffering. So if you're ahead of the curve and you see what's going on and you apply it to your business, you don't have to, you're just kind of riding the economy. And that gets back to the cocky guy that I am, the optimist that I am. You can hustle in any economy.
Yep.
I will add to that. Eric Thomas, I don't know if you've heard of the Eric the Hip Hop Preacher.
Mm-mm.
He's actually the number one motivational speaker in the world.
No kidding.
And he actually did the best of his work in a depression. That's when people need motivation. That's when people need to laugh. And guess what he does? What he did to become... He gave away free content. So everything Sean's saying, it's not just optimism and pie in the sky, right?
That's the model now, too, is like over-delivering value for free, and then there's an upsell. And then people want to kind of like almost invest in your brand. And I think there's also sort of a line to walk there, because if you like really, you can give away so much that people don't feel the need to ever spend.
Well, Deanna and I go through that with our program. Like, when do we got to start now asking for a fee? And that gets back to the confidence and believing in yourself and your brand to know that there's a point. Like, we're at the point now. I go into meetings like, this is our fee, and this is what we charge.
Uh-huh.
And that becomes the confidence in knowing your brand and knowing your worth. And you've put in the work in the background. Because some people, I hate the person on the podium that's asking for money and hasn't even done anything to prove it.
Yeah, right.
Well, to the point of over-delivering, Karen, I think you've over-delivered as a guest.
Thanks, guys.
You've been amazing.
This was so fun.
We had high expectations, but you've exceeded those.
I had the best time. This was really so much fun. I'm very motivated. Like, I feel very inspired now to, like, maybe at some point in the next coming weeks, check my credit score.
We'll have to have you come back and we'll talk.
I would love that.
Yeah, see how you're doing.
Two black guys motivated you. See that?
Very
no pun intended.
So as our show's coming to a close, we definitely want to thank you, Karen, for coming. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for your contribution to the show.
Thank you, guys.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, this was really fun.
And anything on the horizon? What are your handles? Where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram's my favorite. Honestly, I love it.
It's my favorite.
Karen Margolis, KerenMargolis. And I'm on both Twitter and TikTok. That's a new thing for me. Millennials, we can really go like old and young. and that's Karen Kardashian, KEREN. You guys know how to spell Kardashian. And yeah, hit me up.
Sean, as a baby boomer, is not familiar with TikTok. And
I am not.
It's all the kids are doing, Sean.
I'm figuring this out. TikTok, you don't stop there. Ooh, I wanna say
no. It's very similar to what you just said.
Thank you, Karen. And everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Two Black Guys with Good Credit. Thank you. Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit. As we bring this show to an end, we want to again thank our guest, Karen Margolis. We had a great time with her, and I hope you enjoyed it. Dion?
Yeah, I want to say thank you for Karen for being just being so vulnerable and so open. And as a 30-something, really creating a space for that generation who is just trying to figure things out. So I think you probably really helped a lot of people get motivated for this 2020. If you have any more questions that she didn't touch on, please always want to hear from you. Send your email, send your questions to tbgwgc@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Two Black Guys Good Credit. And then don't forget to leave us a 5-star review where others can find us. This was pretty cool. The Podcast Discovery Show said, amazing show, great hosts. So this one's pretty special because it's a podcast about podcasts who gave us a great review. So thank you. My name is Dion Nichols, the lady with the history, the stats, and the cold hard facts. And I'm out.
And my bottom line is that no matter if you're a 30-something, a Generation Xer, a baby boomer, or whatever, we all have something to learn on our financial journey. But the main point is that nothing changes if nothing changes. So make those changes in your life and keep listening to Two Black Guys with Good Credit. And I'm Matt Smith, and I'm out.
I'm Sean, and my takeaway is, first of all, I want to thank my homegirl Karen for coming out. She did an amazing job. I hope you guys are listening to Race Wars and then listen to Black Guys with Good Credit back to back, and you'll see how diverse my friend can be. And getting back to that word diversify, that's the lesson for all you young people listening, and know that the key to success and growing wealth and creating wealth and just overall happiness in life is knowing how to diversify, knowing when to get in something, knowing when to get out, and have that Karen confidence to know that whatever your true gifts are in life, that you can do it and pursue it and be successful at it. And I'm Sean, the better half of Two Black Guys with Good Credit. Your money is your money, and keep it in your damn pocket, people. Black guys.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.